I am the light of the world, the only light there is. This is the 11-day spiritual retreat, lecture number 10, July 8th. I am the light of the world, the only light there is. A lot of people would take umbrage with that. They would disagree with that. They would say, how can you be the only light of the world when I'm the only light of the world? Or how can you be the only light of the world when Jesus said he was the light of the world? How can you be the light of the world when God is the light of the world? Well, everything you have said is correct, and more. I am the light of the world, the only light there is. We have a phrase that we use in our seminars, and we use in our courses, we use in the University of Healing, and that phrase is, I am God, God I am. Now, that is not a blasphemous phrase, it is a phrase of fact. God created everything, and in everything is God, and God is everything. And so, in everything is God, and all of God. And why then are we all acting so differently as human beings? We are all acting differently as human beings because we are each in charge of our rheostat. We are each in charge of our ability to have a bright light or a dim light. We can either have a light that lightens just the immediate world that we're living in, or a light that lights the entire world. We can have the light of an expression of God or the allness of God. Now, when we express the allness of God, we cease to be a unique expression. And man's greatest challenge and greatest fight throughout his life is to be an expression. He does not want to be the allness. He does not want to be lost. He does not want to lose his individuality. And because he doesn't want to lose his individuality, he does not turn his light too bright. Because you all know the principle of a rheostat. The principle of a rheostat in a football stadium, you turn the lights up a little bit and it lights the field like a moonlight. You turn it up a little more, it lights it up like daylight. You turn it up all the way and you can't even see the player playing. The light is so bright because there's so many lumens of light there. Now, you and I are like this. That light bulb has all the light in it, if you will. You know, that light bulb has all the light in it to make everything invisible because it's so bright, you know. Okay? And that light bulb has within it the ability to be only a little bit of light. And that's quite lovely. But it is whose choice? Whose choice is it to make that football feel like night, like evening, like moonlight, like daylight, or like tremendous light that is just overwhelming? Whose choice is it? Well, basically, it's the groundskeeper. The groundskeeper is the fellow who takes care of the grounds and makes everything beautiful. And the groundskeeper is there to turn on the lights and to set them at the appointed lumens, at the appointed brightness, okay? Now, he's setting the lights at the appointed brightness because that's a choice that he's been given by others, that he may set it. He may not choose to set it. He may not choose to determine how bright it is. He can only set it. He can only turn the dial to where he has been paid to turn the dial to. So he's turned the dial at 1 to 10. He's turned the dial to 6. And that's where he's supposed to turn the dial. For brighter than that, people become indistinct. You can't see the players on the field. They're so bright. And so they know that. They know that in the headquarters of the stadium. So, this groundskeeper goes out there and he turns the lights up to the appointed number. What was the number? How quickly we all forget, huh? Number is 7. Okay, so he turns the light up to the number 7 and the light is just fine. And it's just as bright as it wants to be. 7's a good number, easy to remember. So he turns the light up to 7, and he goes about his work. Well, he unfortunately forgets to lock the cabinet door in which the light switches are, because that's so that no one will monkey with him. And so he goes about his work, taking care of everything, making sure everything's right for the game that's coming up. And some kids come around, and they're looking here and looking there, curious as they always are. And if anything will open without them breaking into it, they'll open it. So here's this cabinet, this wonderful cabinet, just at their height, and they open it. And they see all these switches in there and all these rheostats. And they see one main rheostat. And they say, wow, what is all this stuff here? And so they say, well, mentally, if this is unlocked, it is not something that they should not play with. If it were locked, they shouldn't play with it. And they wouldn't play with it. So they're going to play with it. So they play with the little switches. And they turn this one up and that one up. And so in different parts of the field, the lights go on and off and up and down and on and off. And they're just having, and they see that. They say, oh, this is a game. It's like, you know, the game in the game shop, you know, or in my computer. And so then one of the kids says, hey, what's this big one here? And so he turns it down, and the lights all go off. And the game, the grounds manager says, hey, it was up there fooling around. And so then the kids quickly turn it all the way on and run away. You know, they wanted to leave it like it was. They didn't realize that they're playing far. And the groundskeeper is lost. The groundskeeper cannot find his way to the light box because everything is so bright. There is no individuality. There's no distinctness. There's no light box. He cannot find his way to the rheostat box to turn it on. And so he's got to just stop and go within himself and close his eyes and say, I know that I know that I know where it is. And so he just points himself toward it and just opens his eyes a little bit because he can't see anything anyhow. And if he opens it a lot, he'll just get blinded. So then he walks in the direction he thinks he should go. And he stumbles over this chair. He stumbles over that. But he finally recognizes certain areas of the stadium that he's familiar with. And then he follows along the handrail, and he gets to the rheostat box. And he tries to open the box, but the kids had slammed the cover closed, and it locked. And he didn't have the key. So now what was he going to do? Here the lights are on full bright. Nobody can see anything. Anybody walked to the stadium, they would not see a stadium. They would just see a light, you know, like a Star Trek sort of thing, you know. And they'd say, what are they going to do? So the gate groundskeeper, he walks his way back, remembering he took the handrail, and he finds his way back to his office. And when he gets to his office, inside the office is not so light. And he's able to find the key for the box. So then he comes out of his office, goes back to the box, opens it up, and turns down the rheostat to whatever the appointed number was. What was that?
Seven.
He appoints it seven. And it's quite bright, but not overwhelmingly bright. It's every time you turn it, one little number, it goes a great amount each time. And so each little number from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 wasn't so great. But we start going to 8 and go, whoa, 9, 10, really bright. So he's back to normal. And when he's got that all set, he looks around. He doesn't see anything. He sees the grounds. He sees the people. No people. He just sees the grounds because it's before the game starts. Nobody who did this. He could not tell who did this. So with key in his pocket, he locks the box and goes about his work. Now, for a little while, he was an extremely illumined being. He was in this light brighter than light, this light which was all light, this light enduring which he could see nothing. He could see nothing. And he had to bump into things and then tell by feeling what was that he was going into. And even that, somebody else wouldn't know that if they were unfamiliar with the area, unfamiliar with. But he put his brain to work, pulling it back out of the clouds, back into relative world, and he brought himself back to find the railing to lead him to the box where he knew he could turn the lights to the proper dimension. Now, I'm the light of the world, the only light there is. I have my rheostat. My rheostat is, I am God, God I am. I am the light of the world. And when I turn that rheostat on, I turn it on so that it's beneficial to me. Now, if I want to be a human, I must turn it on to where?
Seven.
Above seven, I cannot see the people around me too well. Below seven, the people look very bad. And below five and four and three and two, the people are very sickly. The people look very bedraggled. The people look very slow motion. The people look very dead. And I turn it to one or zero, and there is no movement. There is no light. There is no action. There is no nothing. Now, each one of us has the privilege of determining what degree of light we're going to be. Now, many of you say something, and I will say this first. I have told you, and I've told everyone, whoever comes to the University of Healing, the Church of God Unlimited here, the training school we have here, is ready to take their last step. They're ready to go from seven all the way up. See, no intermittent parts going up, but all the way up. They're ready. But they are afraid. They're afraid of so many things. Now, the first thing they're afraid of is losing their identity. Now, that's terrible, because there's nobody who's going to know you except yourself. And you're the only person who really knows yourself anyhow. Now, you will have no mother, brother, sisters, fathers. You'll have no aunts, no uncles, no children, no husbands, no wives. You'll have no teachers. You'll have no mentors. You'll have no world. There'll be no substance upon which you'll be walking. There'll be nothing out there at all. I mean, you're in the nothingness. Now, are you ready for that? You say, oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, like heck you are. Like heck you are. The minute I say Ugo to Seville, she says, oh, that's my son. Yeah. And then I say, what do I say, Willie to Sylvia here, what does she do? She thinks that's a boy we had working. No, she thinks that's her father, you know? She got two things now for him, you know, two Willies. Was your father's name William?
No, Willie.
Will.
Willie.
Huh?
Willie.
Only Willie?
Willie France.
He didn't have a William France, and then he changed it to a nickname of Willie? I kind of think he did.
Probably.
I don't think your mother, that is his mother, would have done that to her child. She let him find his own nickname, like somebody else found the nickname of Rabbi, you know.
Yeah.
So, you see, she let him find his own nickname. Now, Sybil may have called her unborn baby as he was in the process of gestating. She might have said, you are my little angel. You are my little spiritual leader. You are my little Jesus. My little Jesus. And Ugo, who heard this in the womb, he says, Jesus? Jesus was a rabbi. Rabbi? Okay, I'm a rabbi, you know. And so, you see, he interpreted right away while he's in the womb from Jesus to rabbi, which is pretty nice, you know. So, Ugo is Jesus, rabbi, you know, pretty good, huh? And so now, right away she thinks about him. Now, why doesn't she think about Victor Hugo? Why doesn't she think about somebody else who might have the name of Hugo or Ugo, you know, because I've never heard of anyone with the name Ugo before. So it may be a very precious name, very special, and it probably is. But I'm talking about possessions. We have these possessions that own us and possess us and keep us from doing anything at all. And because we have these possessions that keep us from doing anything at all, we are not ready to make that final step. Because to make that final step, we have no possessions. We have no memories. When you turn that rheostat on, there is nothing to remember. Now, the groundskeeper had the rheostat turned up on him, but he had to stop and go back and remember where the bars were, where the railings were, where his box was. He had to go back into it instead of going forward into the light. Now, if he wanted to, that could have been his moment of ascension, you know? Because he was in that light, which was so bright that there was no existence. Nobody saw him. Nobody knew he was at the field. They couldn't even see the field. They couldn't see anything. It was as though everything was blotted out. Miracle. But that's the way you are when you have your own rheostat and you work your own rheostat. But, again, are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready to leave behind all memories? Well, what's the use of living and what's the use of being if we don't have the memories? We don't remember our family. We don't remember our friends. We don't remember our job. We don't remember our house. We don't remember who we are, you know? Hey, I was just going to cut my toenail. I can't cut my toenail when I can't see. All is one, all is light, yeah? You know? And you think that's funny. You think that's a joke. That's not a joke. That's real. That's real. You see, we have these mundane thoughts. My toenail. I was just going to cut it. I went in the bathroom. I was going to pick up the clipper and cut. Ah, there's no nothing. It's all light, light, light. I can't see anything. You know, where'd my toenail go? Let your toenail alone. Let your toenail alone. Let all the past alone. But it's hard. It's hard. Because that's what you were going to do. Ingeborg was thinking, I'll take a little nap now. And then I said, there's the light. Ah! I want to take my nap. I'm like, geez, there's no nap to take. There's no body to nap in, no. There's no place to lay down in. You're the allness, the isness. You're the pure white light of love. You're the pure white light of all. You're the all light, you know, the only light. I am the light of the world, the only light there is. Now, can you believe that's true? And can you recognize how when you turn your rheostat up and you are all light, that as far as you're concerned, that you're the only light. And nobody else can see you because you're the light. They may look at your light, but they can't see you. And the minute they turn up their rheostat, then they are looking with their light at your light, and they can't see anything either, can they? They don't even know that you're a separate light out there. They walk right through you and don't even know that you're there, you know? And this goes with everybody. Now, will everyone one day be the light of the world and be the only light there is? No. They are that right now. When people recognize it, can they recognize it? No. Because that's what they are right now. When people want that, can they be it? No. Because they are that right now. Now, well then, what are you talking about? I see me, I see my friends, I see people around me. I see. You know? No, you don't. We are all a big, wonderful illusion. No, we're not. We're not light yet. See, we're the pretending that we're not the light. See, we're an illusion. And as an illusion is true light too, you know. The illusion that you look at when you see a motion picture, yeah, you think it's very real, but it's not any more real than the illusion of you and me right now sitting here talking to each other. We are merely an advanced illusion. We are a holographic illusion. Hey! Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Are they working on holographic illusions right now? Mm-hmm. Will they one day be able to create holographic illusions just as real as we are? Will you be able to touch the holographic illusion? Yes.
Yeah.
Remember in Star Trek how they had the holodeck? And now in the holodeck, they were able to fight and touch these things, but they were still illusion. And they chopped off their heads and their arms and so forth. And then as soon as their game was over, poof, everything is back in like it was. You know, no chop, no blood, no everything is back. And that's the way we are, really. That's the way we are. Nothing can be created or destroyed or lost or had. Everything already exists as an idea. You know? We live in such a fabulous, fantastic, exciting, marvelous world. Wow.
Oh.
Yes. I was reading about the Hindu teachings this morning, and as I was reading about them, I was thinking, why do you want to fight for having mortality when you can turn your attention to your immortality and be that? Yeah? Why do we want to have reincarnation after reincarnation? Why do we want to have dimension after dimension after dimension? We've got it. We've got all these things. Now, why do we want to study it and learn it? Those are intermediate steps. You're at your final step now. You're at your final step of turning your rheostat to its fullest, you know, by your choice. Nobody's forcing you to do this. Nobody requires it that you leave behind all that which is past. Nobody requires that at all. You're totally free to move into whatever aspect of beingness you want to be. And if you want to say, hey, damn, 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 this is a good book. I must read it over again. Don't. If you got the illumination, it's a good book, you got it. Now go on. Don't ever read it over again. Well, Herb, you told us to read over the Art and Science of Holiness and Song of Spirit and Illuminations and stuff like that. And what you should have said to me is, I'm living it. If you have to read it over to remember what it said, you didn't read it the first time. You just sat through it the first time and pretended that you were reading it. You know how you do sometimes? You read a book and you wake up, what did I read? What was on the page there? And you're not bad for doing that. You're stupid, but you're not bad. Now, Sybil has bought herself a course in which she is going to learn speed reading. Now, I tell Sybil right now, the only benefit you're going to get out of that program is that you will remember more of what you read, which is not bad. But you'll remember more. You'll read faster, that's true. And you'll read more, but you'll remember more out of what you read. So be very careful what you read, because it's just like, I don't know what sort of an illustration you would give for this, but if a person, if you're going to do a lot of reading, be very selective of the reading you're doing, because it's going to be things that you're going to place in your mind, in your mental attitude, in your mental vocabulary, your mental dictionary, and are those the things you really want there? You know, the training books may have you read stuff that are exciting and interesting, and you'll have a good retention of it, but the thing is, do you really want to keep that in your mind? Do you want to keep all of the Da Vinci Code in your mind? Do you want to keep the Bleep movie in your mind? Some of it is interesting. Some of it is kind of way out. But you have to be selective. And speed reading and memory training that it gives you and does very well does not necessarily teach you to be selective in what you remember. And this is very important. Now, take this illustration for all that's worth. Little boy is autistic. And so his mother says, oh dear, look at this grocery bill. 10 cents here, dollar there, 15 cents here, dollar and a half, $1.92, $1.48, $1.92, and 87, and just look at this, here. And it adds up to $1.18. $1.18? How did that add up to $1.18? Because you had credit. And you said you had credit in the first statement you made. You said, I have a credit of $48. And then you read the rest of the items, which were, you know, leaving you with just $1.18 balance you had to pay. How did you know that, son? Oh, poof. You see, he knows these things without judgment. Now, he knows the numbers and how they're used, but he doesn't know what they're for. And sometimes we know the numbers and how they're used, but not what they're for. Now, is what the numbers are for more valuable than the numbers? Presumably. The information of the number, what the numbers are for, is more valuable than just the numbers. The numbers are always the numbers. The numbers are always going to be whatever they are and have nothing to do with anything else. Now, you see, when you're the light of the world, You're going to know all these things, and you're going to know nothing. And if you ever are aware of anything, you are not the allness. You are not expressing that light which is the allness light. You are not the light of the world. You are the light of you, which is okay. But the thing is, to remain now, this is one of the big points that we have to study in our field here. How do we remain the only light there is? How do we remain the light? How do we remain the light when around us the world is race consciousness and other things trying to seep into us? Can it seep into us? No. Why do you think it can seep into us? Well, does that make it real?
No.
Do people think this? Yes. And because people think that, they're so worried that they're not going to be able to take care of their mom. Now, we have our dear student Ingeborg Bolz, and Ingeborg is just a supergirl. Well, Ingeborg's big problem was taking care of her mother, because her mother took care of her all the years of her life, because she had some problems that her mother helped her with all the years of her life. Her mother helped her as a mother would help, you know, and she didn't always appreciate it, and she never really did appreciate it. Well, when her mother became invalid and in a nursing home, she wanted to take care of her mother. She did everything she could to take care of her mother. She made sure that her mother had everything. Her mother had this, and her mother had that, and her mother would be well taken care of. And her mother was very well taken care of anyhow. She had money of her own, and she had state money that was available to her. So she had no problem. But her daughter says, I cannot die before my mother. You know, surely my mother's going to die before me, because my mother is very ill, and my mother's, and I cannot die before my mother. Well, she died. Here she died, and she died in such a way that her mother's not benefiting anything from what she has. Her mother is benefiting from what she has, which is fine, but not from what Ingeborg had. So here Ingeborg, the very thing she worried about the most all her life came to pass. Not because she did anything bad, not because she did anything good, but just circumstances. Or was it that she created that? She created that. She created that, and that became her world. And you see, there now she is in hell, looking back at her mother and saying, Mom, I'm sorry, Mom, I'm sorry, Mom, I'm sorry, I did my best for you. Or is she?
No.
Now, just be careful. I'm pulling your leg here. Be careful of what you're saying no to. Are you saying, no, she's not thinking those sad thoughts? No, she's not in heaven? No, she's not in hell? What are you meaning by your no? You know?
That she's her independent self, not thinking back.
No. You're almost there. That she is her unique beingness, and there is no past.
Right.
Not thinking good or bad, yeah. But there is no past.
Yeah.
There is absolutely no past. Now, this is our reality as we make our step in our next dimension or whatever we want to call the thing, okay?
Yeah.
Now, there is no past. Do you believe there is no past? Do you believe there's only now? And you say, oh, yes, 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 yes. Well, if and when and as you move into your next dimension, there is no past. You're not going to remember your mommy and daddy and sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles and cousins and everybody else. You're not going to remember them because there's no past. There's no reality, you see? And being what
there's
is...
There's no reality?
There's no reality in past. See, the past has no reality. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And so, our reality is what?
It's unchangeable.
The now.
The reality is even further than the now. The reality... Huh? What?
Original.
What?
Original purity. I
mean, yeah, but it's even better.
It's all.
The isness, the allness, the isness, the allness, that's your reality. The reality is the isness and the allness, which has no uniqueness, which has no now, or it has no past or future. those are good terms, you know, and or use them as relative beings. Yeah. There is only now and the relative. Would you buy that?
Yeah.
Okay, if it's only now and the relative, what are we putting it in the future tense for, or in the other dimension? Thank you. Why are we putting it in the absolute, you know? You see, it's so easy for us to get confused with our vocabulary. So easy for us to get confused with our use of terms. And then when we get confused with the use of the terms, what do? We say what is real is not real. We say what is the fact is not the fact. We say where we are is not really where we are. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? That means I am the light of the world. And those are all things that are totally unimportant to me. Now, Sylvia went for a visit to see where her brother was after he passed on. And he had passed on, been gone many years, but we took a visit to him and had a good time with him. And is that real? As real as Sylvia wants it to be. Is that actual? As actual as Sylvia wants it to be. Is it a joke? If Sylvia wants it to be a joke, it's a joke, you know. But can Ellen go visit her father? Sure. Why? I can't imagine. But would Ellen, if Ellen wants to, well, let's say she goes to visit her husband, Elias. And she says, Elias, why did you pull that damn thing that you did just before you died? That's so stupid, you know. It makes everybody uptight. And he says, isn't that funny? Yeah. Isn't that funny? And all is in the mouth. And so, but you see, it's her creation. She is living it with him in the future, in the present, in the now, and whatever terms she has. Now, if she were really creator of her world, she would say, well, let's see, I think I'll go visit Elias. I know where you are, Elias. You can't hide from me. You're on the right hand of God. And you're up there on the throne, and you're in bliss. You're everything that's good, because you, Elias, are good. Because you, Elias, are the most fantastic man in the world. Because you're the most honorable, most delightful, enjoyable being on earth. And Elias, I know you can't kid me. You played a couple games here to shake our boat and to see if we fell in the trap of believing illusions. And you know, Elias, I almost did, but I didn't. And I am in charge. Now, you see, all this is taking place right in her mind, right in her thought, right in her being. And it's as real as she intends to make it. And it's as illusionary as she intends to make it. Now, her son had a few ideas about his dad and the problems that he went through, and he held on to these for a number of years. Well, I was at their house, and I had a chance to speak to him and all the group, the family, about the father and the type of man he is. And I told him. And as I told him, they were listening, even though it was in English. They were listening very carefully, because they were creating a new image of their father, of Elias, at that time for themselves, regardless of any past, regardless of any illusions that they had about the past. Now, was that correct? You bet it was correct. Was that the real truth, the whole truth, nothing but truth? You bet it was. Now, why didn't they have it before? Because they listened to the illusions. They looked at the appearances. You see? That car crashed into the tree. And then you go around the other side of the tree. Why? It just stopped in front of it. It didn't even touch it. In fact, it stopped 10 feet this way from it, but from my point of view, it looked like it was crashing right into the tree, you know? See, we have illusions in our world, which are visual illusions, mental illusions, social illusions, intellectual illusions. Now, we have made a damnable statement, just a damnable, damnable statement, again and again and again. We have said, Bill Gates is the richest man in the world. I'm the richest man in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You're the richest man in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The richest man in the world is the only one world, and that's the world you have. Is Sylvia the richest lady in the world?
Yeah.
Does Sylvia realize it in every area of her being? She's working on it.
But is she the richest? Is she the richest, richest, richest? Does anyone have to give anything to her? Nothing. And if she takes anything from anybody, what's she doing? She thinks she's poor and needs it. Now, if she will take it and immediately give it away, that's okay. But to take it and keep it because she needs it, what do these outstanding tenors do and these outstanding actors and so forth do when they have give special shows? The show is called a benefit. Who is it for? The benefit of the actor? No, it's for the benefit of some charity. It could be the Red Cross, you know. It could be the Cancer Society. It could be God Unlimited, University of Healing, you know. It could be anything. You follow me? Now, they are putting on the show because of what? Because they want to make the benefit or because they love being showmen? They love their trade. They love their field. Now, if they didn't love what they did, they wouldn't want to put on benefits, even if it was going to be very beneficial. Oh, I'm tired. They're not tired when they get up and do a benefit. When they do a benefit and they know that it's for the Children's Society and all these little children are going to have a prosthesis that they hadn't had before. They're going to have glasses. They're going to have false teeth. Children with false teeth. Or whatever things they need. You know, they're going to have whatever they need. And it's going to be fulfilled for them right now for every one of them. And my goodness, your heart just goes busting out all over and saying, isn't that wonderful? You just are full of goosebumps everywhere, you know? And this is what makes the world go round. You see, this is turning up your rheostat. But if it is ever that you need it, then forget it. Because you always have it. You always have. That rheostat is right there for you, you know? Now, when you turn your rheostat down and you see the crippled children needing things. I was president of the Crippled Children's Society in Merced County for a number of years, and I had hundreds and even thousands of, you know, thousands of crippled children that went through our program and our money-making projects and stuff. And over a couple of years, it was really great. And I never mentioned anything about it, never even think about it. But did I feel good about it? No. What I felt good about was these kids. After they had received some help, they just were bubbly all over. They were so happy. And they'd kick out their prosthesis and say, look, see what I can do with my leg now? See how I can walk? See what I can do? And I say, well, bully, bully, bully. I see you walking perfect always. Come on, run with me. How about you got the leg? Come on, run with me. So they come running with me because I'm a magical man. And when they run with me, they never stop running. They never stop it. They never remember that they couldn't. They never remember that they had a problem. They may have the prosthesis, but it's only because that's what their choice is at the moment, you see. But they never remember. Now, this is what we are. I'm the light of the world, the only light there is. What kind of light do you give people? The kind that says, work on it and you'll get it, or you are it now. Huh?
You are it now.
Yes. Phew, I was afraid you might have lost it. You are it now. But isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful? And doesn't that tell you something about yourself?
Yes, because I am it too. I am it now.
Ellen, how many children did you run with who put on their new leg or who put on their new arm or who got their new knee or hip ball joints and stuff, and you ran with them and you said, you're wonderful, you're fantastic, you can do anything. And then they did it. How many did you do?
Hundreds.
You see, Ellen doesn't like to remember those things because she did it so spontaneously. Ellen goes into the grocery store and she says to a little child, you're beautiful and you're wonderful. And she says to the little child, you're a genius. And the mother is paying the bill, and the mother is thinking, I've tried to say that to this child so long, so often, but nothing happened. And so the mother gets home, and the little girl says, Mommy, what does it mean to be a genius? And she says, well, it means that you are wise, and you listen to the divine within you, and you always have the right answer for whatever question you have in your mind and heart. Well, Mom, is a genius a nice person? A genius is always a nice person, because that's the only kind of persons that I know and the only kind of person you know. But, Mommy, was that lady a genius who talked to me in the store? What was that, sweetheart? What did the lady say? Well, the lady said I was a genius. And then when I looked around to say thank you, she wasn't there anymore. She's gone. Mommy, was she God? Yes, dear, and so are you. Now, is that true? Oh, boy, more than you know. Ellen is such a spontaneous person. She's speaking here, then she steps over here and speaks over here, and she speaks over here, and little miracles are happening to all of her little speaks that she does, and then she walks away thinking, well, I got to pay the bill now, you know, mundane things. And if she would have just realized, looked at the bill in her hand, said, oh, it's already paid.
Yeah,
it's already paid. But you see, this is what the game is all about, isn't it? This is what the game is all about. This is what our life is all about. Our life is about turning on our rheostat. Our life is being the light of the world. Now, how are you the light of the world? Ingeborg, are you the light of the world whenever anyone calls up or whenever the phone rings and you answer it, but before you pick it up you say, I am the light of the world. I unconditionally love this person who's calling right now because I unconditionally love myself, and I will be the most gentle, loving, fabulous telephone answerer that ever was. And so the person on the other line, end of the line, says, hey, this guy, you're all about Yabu. And you say, yes, may I help you? Well, Yabu, they're so terrible. Well, that's fine, but what may I help you do? Well, they did. Well, what may I help you? I'm here to be a blessing in your life. If there's anything I can do to help you. Well, yeah, you see, you take the wind out of their sails. Now, Ellen, when this man called up about the motorhome, very belligerent, Ellen should have just said, hey, you are one of the most gentle speaking people I have talked to this week. You have such a tenderness in your voice. You have such a caring. You realize that I'm at the other end of the line here, and I can only see you by your voice. And your voice is so beautiful and so caring and so loving. You are a marvelous person. Ah, blah, blah, blah. And you are so thoughtful. And, you know, you think that our motorhome is the finest motorhome in the world. And when you come and see it, you realize that that's so. And you say, we're not asking enough. And you're going to give us full Blue Book value for it because you realize that it is so wonderful. And he says, boy, oh boy, what side of the bus did you get off of? And you just say, on your side, because we're here for you. We're here for you because we love you. We bless you. Unconditionally, we love you. You're fantastic. You must make a wonderful husband. I bet you come home from work with a gentle heart and speak to your wife and say, sweetheart, you're the most wonderful lady in the world. And you gather all your children in your arms and hold them, you hug them, and you don't say a word, but you just hold them and hold them and hold them and hold them. And then your kids say, Daddy, is everything okay? And Daddy says, I'm just soaking up love. And I'm giving out love.
Wow.
And they say, oh, Daddy, you know. I mean, can you imagine if parents would do that with their children? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine if Ingeborg would do that when she gets on the phone? Yes. Yes. You see, Ingeborg, this is a place of the purest love. And every one of us are unconditional lovers, including you, very much you. And we see you as an unconditional lover. This is the way Sylvia always answers the phone. Sylvia always answers the phone saying, your name is God? And, no, I'm not God, I'm God. Yes, you are. You're divine. You know, you're wonderful. You're fantastic. And they say, well, now, that's how about that? What I like to do is I like to order a book. Well, we have 14 books. Would you like me to send the whole group out? We have a bargain rate on sending them out of 14 books at $8 a piece, or let's say $10 a piece, so it's $140. So $140, we're sending them all 14 books for $100, including shipping. So if you'd like to have them, we'll send them to you. And then if you have friends you want to send them to, now is the time to really order them, and we'll send them all out for $100 each. So if you want to do that, great. Now, We talked to a Roman Catholic priest the other day, and he was saying how A Gift from Self to Self had been such an illuminating book. He had to read it slowly and deeply, and he said it is so profound and it is so significant that it is better than the catechism that he grew up with in the Catholic Church. And then we also have a Jewish a rabbi who was interested in our book, and the Jewish rabbi started reading the book, and he says, I know I'm going to want to read all of them, so send them all. And you have 14 books, and that's $10 a book, that's $140. I'll send you. No. You send us $100, and we'll send you all of them. You're taking away $40 that I offered to pay you. Send the $40 in as a donation if you will want. We are offering you whatever we offer anybody else, because we don't have secret deals. Now, if you really want it, we'll send it to you. Wow, you're a great organization. You know, my mother is a great reader, and I think I'll send her a set. My dad, who is so sharp for my mother, is a great reader, and I'll send him a set. And my sister, and so pretty soon he's got 8 sets, you know. And so you're sending out all these books. Now, you see, when you are pure love, when you put this in consciousness, when you put this into thought, not because you're trying to make money, and not because you're trying to sell the books, you're just opening the philosophy up to others. You're opening up your belief of what you believe, and you make it sound so exciting and so delightful and so charming and so desirable. These are the things that we want to do. Now, when are you going to start doing that about yourself? Ellen?
Now.
Please. I didn't ask you for an answer. When are you going to start selling yourself, Ellen, as you would sell the books? Now the discount necessary, but sell yourself and you sell the books. You go out, and is there ever anyone who doesn't deserve all the teaching that you have to share? Is there ever anyone, just because they're not listening, that doesn't deserve to hear everything you have to say? Is there ever anyone that is so lowly and so poor that they don't deserve your attention? And all of you know, you have run into people like that. You have run into people which you use judgment on. And as you use judgment on them, you turned your rheostat down. Mm-hmm. What you could have done was to turn your rheostat up to see them in your light. Then as you see them in your light, you know, all the negativity that had been there before is washed away by the brightness of your light. You see, our light is the light of the world. Our light is the light that brings peace on earth. And it just starts with us. It starts with us. We talked to our friend Michael Milligan, and he was just starting to read the Bible for the first time in his life, he said. And as he was reading, we talked to him about it, but as he was starting to read the Bible, it says this, and he went on and on and on, and I thought to myself, boy, oh boy, oh boy, you would make a good theologian, you just are right to the letter on what it says. And I said, Michael, do you find any inconsistencies in the Bible? Oh my, yes, but it says this. And I said, now think of these inconsistencies in the Bible that are trying to tell you in no uncertain terms, the Bible is an allegory. The Bible is a metaphor. The Bible is something that tells a story. It's a parable to get you to thinking. It is not gospel truth. If the Bible were taken as gospel truth, we would have some super stories, I tell you. Oh my, oh my. It has some super stories. The story of Job, one of the greatest stories ever written, the greatest piece of literature ever written. You read that, and it is so beautifully interwoven with all the little intrigues and all of the little activities of the devil and God and the friends of Job, and how they try to tell him he should deny God, and then he wouldn't have to lose everything. But he would not deny God. He would not deny his belief in himself. And he lost his barns and his house. He lost his crops. He lost his sheep and his goats and his cows. And he lost his children. He lost his wife. He lost his house. He lost everything. But he would not deny God. And finally, God says, okay, devil, you've had your time. Now I'm going to return to him in overflowing measure all that he ever had, and he will not remember the past. He will only live in the present and be enjoying who he really is. You put boils over his body, he won't remember that. You put near death, but he won't remember that. He will live in eternity now forever. See? Now, if someone told you the story of Job like that, and that's a very shortly done job in just a couple of minutes there, if someone told you a story like that, would that be exciting? Would that be a totally different direction? Many of the stories I tell from the Bible, I'm not telling them to belittle the Bible. My goodness, no. I'm telling them to tell you the Bible is a story. It is a allegory. It is a way that the people were taught religious values. They were taught spiritual values. They were taught ethical values. They were taught moral values. They were taught how to live together as a community. And you see, the word community still lives on in Africa as a political symbol of an area that people live in. And in America, in English, the word community is a group of people or a group doing something together. What is the spiritual community in America? What is the religious community in America? What is the community of Mormons and so forth, you know? And all of these beautiful things. But you see what I'm saying? The word community takes on a totally beautiful direction. Now, this is what happens when we turn on our lights. When we turn on our light, we have no desire to belittle another person. We have no desire to take good from another person. We have no desire to make another person feel less than absolutely fantastic every moment of their life. No desire, ever. Our only desire is to be ourselves and have fun. And can you imagine being yourself and having fun? Can you imagine how Bill Gates is going to spend these billions of dollars that he has in a philanthropic way? He's going to think, now what sort of a game would I like people to be able to play? I would like people to play the game of speed reading. And so I'm going to create a course in speed reading, which is going to really be super. And it's going to be just a chip that you put in. It's going to be just something so simple, so beautiful. You just take a drink. You know, now you're a speed reader. Now you're divine. Now you're pure light or some simple thing like that. And wouldn't that be fun? And experimentally working with that with unlimited funds. And he's the chef of ideas. He's the man who has the think tank. He's got a tank full of beautiful people thinking of a thousand different ideas, and all he does is say, let's work on this one now. Let's work on this one now. Let's work on... Hey, isn't that great? No begging. Just being better and better and better and better all the time to express all that they are and he is and we are. We are so blessed. We are so blessed to be living in a world filled with people who love themselves, who know themselves, and who are themselves. And they are God, and they are the light of the world, just as you and I are the light of the world, the only light there is. We are so blessed. Thank you for being here with me this morning on our 10th day of our 11-day spiritual retreat. It's a joy to be with you, an honor, and I respect you, and I see each one of you living in your pure white light of love right now. I love you. I love you.
I love you.